Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. T-minus 7 days till the White's Company gets hit with permanent collaborator status from the Collaborators Project. Now, today's show, it's a Friday. We're going to do a real Science Friday show. And in fact, we have Fred Williams in studio. Fred, how are you?
Real good, Bob. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, we have such a good time when we talk about creation, evolution on Fridays, Fred. And these are the most popular shows we do on the internet. Thousands of people download each show. So thanks for all your work.
Thank you, Bob.
But first, Fred gave me permission to give an update. So here we go. We've got T-minus 7 days and counting until the White's Company, and there's big news about this today, until the White's Company, if they do not stop building Denver's new abortion clinic, and this is a $1 billion construction firm building a child-killing center, if they don't stop that construction by January 31st, they will be hit with permanent collaborator status. Now, in the last 24 hours, there's been some news about this. In the Denver Post today, there's an article, if you go online, denverpost.com, here is the headline, American Life League praises Colorado efforts to stop Planned Parenthood abortion facility. And in this article, this is so encouraging. They link to the Collaborators Project. Now, Will Duffy's website is going to light up today. I'll tell you that. Fred, you're a webmaster, right?
Yes, and boy, I'd highly recommend that website, collaboratorsproject.com.
That's right. Yeah, it's a good website, right? It's clean as could be. There's not a lot to read, but
it gets to the point.
It gets to the point, doesn't it? It's really powerful. So here at denverpost.com, Judy Brown, the president of American Life League, says, in an effort to convince the building contractor to withdraw from the project, the local pro-lifers have established the Collaborators Project. And then the Denver Post gives the URL, the link, collaboratorsproject.com. This project has established a January 31st, 2008 deadline for the White's Company to stop building the Planned Parenthood Abortion Center. We pray that White's will make the right decision and remove itself. So now Judy Brown, she's awfully polite, Fred. She's a really gracious, wonderful woman, but she's tenacious. She fights like a lion.
Yeah, this is boy, I highly recommend you go to this website and read the press release, read Will Duffy's letter to the White's Company.
To the White's Company, the deadline letter to White's. And now this is a second press release that will be added to that website today, collaboratorsproject.com. This from American Life League and a link to the Denver Post here. Then, also in the last 24 hours, the world's best-known anti-abortion protest group, Operation Rescue / OSA, Operation Save America, they have a press release out saying that there are White's locations all over the country. They're saying to their protesters, which are nationwide, they're saying there is a White's, convenient White's location near you. So as of February 1st, if White's gets designated with permanent collaborator status for building a child-killing center, please begin to protest the homes of White's executives and their clients. So their major clients' homes, as in this ongoing effort to make abortion unthinkable and increase the social tension.
That's right. And that's, Bob, that's White's, W-E-I-T-Z, right?
Yes, W-E-I-T-Z. And in fact, if somebody goes to the website, thewhitescompany.com, that's Will Duffy's website. He's got the website.
He registered that name?
He registered that name. And that will bring you to, it resolves to thecollaboratorsproject.com. And if somebody Googles White's, I'm going to do it right now. Fred, we're on the air, right?
We're on the air.
This is live radio, but check this out. This you're going to enjoy seeing this. I'm Googling White's, W-E-I-T-Z, the word White's. Look at this, thewhitescompany.com. It's right at the top of the page.
The very first item on the Google search.
Thewhitescompany.com, specializing in building abortion clinics. You click on it. This is a $1 billion firm. They build resorts, you know, and They built Columbine High School. And here it takes you to the Collaborators Project for now. Eventually, there'll be a special website designated to the White's Company as the hub of the Collaborators Project, with their clients being the spokes. So the clients of the White's Corporation, they're the spokes. And White's is the hub of the Nationwide Collaborators Project. So White's clients will know that they're going to have protesters at their homes. So White's is going to have to feel sympathy for the next client they sign up.
What an effective strategy. This is ingenious.
It's intense, isn't it?
It is.
It's just playing hardball with people who kill kids. You kill kids and you think we care about your attitude toward us, your opinion toward us? I personally, me, Bob Benier, I don't care if you think I am gutter slime. I don't care.
Well, let's pray that White's does the right thing and stops building this project. They have till January 31st.
January 31st. That's right. See, Fred, you're the voice of reason. You're the voice of reason.
Well, you know, Bob, this ties right in with creation science, because evolutionists use evolution to justify abortion.
Mm. That's absolutely right. We're just animals. Animals will eat their young.
Yeah, and you know, there's this German scientist in the 1800s that said that you know, life goes through stages in the womb, as you know, from a fish to different stages up to a human. Of course, that was all a lie, but that lie lived in the textbooks for over 100 years. In fact, some textbooks still have that lie in it. It's called ontogeny recapitulates phylogeny.
Ontogeny recapitulates phylogeny.
And it's been long disproven, but there's a Harvard professor that had it on his website, and I emailed him about it. And he said, yeah, I admit it's not, that drawings aren't completely accurate. Because what Haeckel had done is he phonied these drawings of all these embryos of different animals, and he made them all look the same in the early stages of life. But it turns out they're radically different. When we actually get real photos of what these embryos look
real
like.
Real photos and real fetology.
Exactly.
Real embryology. There are no gills in a human fetus as it's developing. And it's
And a leading embryologist called it the greatest fraud he had ever seen, yet this still remains in many textbooks.
Yeah.
And it's on a Harvard professor's website, and he refused to take it down.
Very good for contacting him. Thank you, Fred.
Sure.
That's hardball.
In the creation, not quite like this, but I really like this collaborator status. That is awesome. Again.
Yeah. Tom? I got a call from Steve Curtis earlier today. He's with American Right to Life Action, political 527 group that's gone after Mitt Romney for being pro-abortion, and he's lying and saying he's pro-life. And Steve, in fact, he did an interview today in Detroit, Michigan, on a radio station that claims to be, and they very well may have, the largest Christian audience in the country out of Detroit, Michigan, WMUZ. He did the Bob Dutko show. And Steve, and that was about Ann Coulter endorsing Mitt Romney, saying he governed as a pro-lifer, which is such an egregious disservice to her readers, because Mitt Romney is a total pro-abort as a governor. So anyway, Steve did that show, which is great, promoting the message of personhood with American Right to Life. But he called me up and he said, Bob, you got to pass a message on to Will Duffy with the Collaborators Project. He said, this concept of permanent collaborator status, he said, if Will was working on Madison Avenue as a marketing PR guy, if he came up with that, that's sort of like Joy kitchen detergent soap. Gee, I could see myself in it, in the plate. You know, he said he could build an entire career off of that one marketing brilliant strategy of permanent collaborator status.
And again, if you go read his letter on the website, it really gives you an idea of the ingenuity behind this whole idea that we're going to protest not just abortion doctors' homes, but people who build abortion clinics. And it's going to make them, we hope, think twice in the future about building other clinics. There are other contractors coming along saying, well, hey, we'll do it.
And if White's never changes their mind, it will still help with others who will see White's as an example. White's is going to be the poster child of the abortion collaborator. And others will know and they'll think, I don't want to get anywhere near that. So here's White's foray into abortion politics.
Great strategy.
Thank you very much, Fred and Steve Curtis, for encouraging Will Duffy like he did with that call this morning. Okay, now, Fred, the issue of Creation Research Society, their quarterly from fall 2007, we wanted to talk about some of the articles in here. And you are the webmaster for this organization, is that
right?
Yes,
so I've been the webmaster for about 7 years. It's an organization that started back in 1963 of like-minded scientists who wanted a venue to publish scientific articles that were favorable to creation because they couldn't find a venue in the mainstream secular magazines because of their bias against creation and against the Bible.
So the very first article in this edition, the fall 2007 edition, which you and I, we don't do enough of these shows, and there's so many great creation publications, we can't get to them all. But so now we're in this issue, and the first article is about astronomy, and it's fun.
That's right. It's written by Danny Faulkner. Now, Danny's really, for the longest time, he was the only astronomer creationist I knew. It's been a field that we just haven't had a lot of guys step forward as creation scientists. But, you know, lately we've had guys like Jason Lyle. I think you know him, right, Bob?
Yeah, he's been on the show. He's come to our church. He's with Ken Ham's.
Yeah, museum. Answers in Genesis, he's an astrophysicist. So we're getting more and more, but it's a field that really is in its infancy as far as creation science goes. There's a lot of work we need to do, and you know, this article addresses some of that. It's really, if you really like astronomy, it's almost like a 5 or 6 page summary of astronomy. I mean, it talks about white dwarf stars, neutron stars, pulsars, supernova remnants,
black holes. Yeah, and of course there are two models of trying to understand the universe: the Big Bang evolution model, that this has all happened by random chance.
Yeah, billions of years ago.
And with biological evolution, with natural selection. But for the Big Bang and all, there's no natural selection out in the universe. Stars formed, galaxies, the beautiful designs, the spiral galaxies, supposedly all by sheer random chance and the force of natural law. So could we talk through that a bit? Because there's... For one thing, there's supposed to be, when these supernovas, when a star explodes, there's supposed to be these supernova remnants.
That's right. It's like a gaseous cloud of a leftover of the, you know, the explosion.
And so if the universe is billions of years old and our galaxy, Milky Way, is billions, we should see many, even within view of our Milky Way galaxy here, we should see many remnants. What are they called? SNRs.
SNRs. And, you know, there's various stages of the remnant depending on how long the thing has been expanding. There's first stage, second stage, and third stage.
Right.
A third stage remnant, really, if the universe were billions of years old, we know that we should see a whole bunch of those. But guess how many we see?
How many? Let's see. Since the universe is not billions of years old, if we should see...
And these are the farthest out expanding supernova remnants. It'd be third stage.
I would guess we see very few.
We see zero.
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 Zero. So if a supernova exploded, let's say, 100 million years ago, then we should be able to detect it, the third stage of its expansion.
That's right. And now if it was only 7,000 years old, or 6,000, let's say, how many should we see? And that would be, we know that that should be roughly a second stage supernova remnant.
Because it's on the earlier stages of expanding, the explosion, the results of the explosion. So I don't know how many we would see just in the last, it depends on how many supernovas occur in a year.
Yeah, so, it is based on that rate, and based on that rate, they estimate that we should see about 2,000 if the universe were billions of years old. But if the universe was, say, 6,000 years old, we should see roughly 125.
Okay.
How many do we see?
I don't know, but I know it's a small number.
It's
but I don't
200.
Know. 200.
So which does it fit better? Is 200 closer to 125 or 2,000?
Oh. Okay, so I think I get this.
So it's evidence for a young universe. I mean, it's not proof of it.
But it's evidence, because if the universe is billions of years old, and if the Big Bang model of star evolution is valid, then there should be thousands of supernovas that we should be able to see their remnants at this third stage of their expansion, and we don't. We see zero.
That's right.
And how about the secular astrophysicists and astronomers? Do they ever write articles saying, where did all the remnants go?
They're quoted as saying that. Where are these missing remnants? Because they expect to find them and they don't.
Well, when I grew up in Prospect Park, New Jersey, there was a remnant store my mother used to shop in, get old rags and sew together things.
And where are all those remnants, Bob?
They're in my closet now with mothballs.
Okay.
But they're different remnants. The supernova remnants are just flat out missing.
That's right. And okay. At the center of a supernova remnant is a neutron star. Now, Bob, what do we know about neutron stars?
Neutron stars, didn't they find this pulsating signals that they thought somebody was beaming information
to?
Yeah,
exactly. Pulsars are basically rapidly rotating neutron stars that have a powerful magnetic field, and so it gives off this pulsating signal, like a radio signal. When they first detected that, they discovered intelligent life.
This was like back in the 1960s.
Yeah, it was 1967, search for extraterrestrial intelligence. They had thought that they had found intelligence, but then they quickly realized this was too regular of an interval, and it wasn't really a signal. It wasn't a code.
Now, this was
It wasn't information.
Yeah, it wasn't information. It was just a spinning star.
That's right.
And this was back when Jodie Foster was like 2 years old.
Yeah.
Now, why do I bring her up?
Well, that's a good that you bring that up, because, you know, in fact, in my talks that I do in my presentation, I'll play a clip of Jodie Foster in the movie Contact. Did you see that movie, Bob?
No, but
there's a scientist named Ellie, and she's works for SETI, which stands for Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, and it's all these computers hooked up to satellites listening for any kind of intelligent signal from outer space. Well, in the movie, you know, one of the climactic scenes is when she hears this signal from space, and when they isolate the signal, it's prime numbers being repeated. And
so they hear a prime number repeated.
Yeah, the signal
does show intelligence.
It does, because that's something that couldn't happen randomly. In fact, she exclaims, "This cannot be a naturalistic explanation."
Because it's intelligence.
Yeah, so they discovered basically information when they deciphered
in the
code.
Movie. Now,
in the movie.
It's a
make-believe, but in the movie, it's a code that actually describes how to design a spaceship that she gets in and gets to travel. It's really goofy after that part.
Yeah, right.
But the point is, she admits that if we find a signal from outer space that is a code, that is like a language, for example, like
code.
English or Fortran or C++.
How old are you?
That does go back to college days.
The computer language.
But if we find information, Bob, we know from information science that a code requires a sender. It's impossible not to get a code naturalistically. It requires intelligence. Mm. So it's a reasonable deduction on her part in the movie that if we find an information source from space, that proves that there's an intelligence. So what do we find in the DNA?
In DNA? You mean in our cells?
In our cells.
In our body. We find information.
We find a code, a language, yet evolutionists will tell us, that all happened by random chance, natural selection working on mistakes in the DNA. How does that happen?
And the information content in the DNA, in the genome of Homo sapiens or any species, is so wildly sophisticated. There are multiple layers of information that are operating simultaneously. It's like having a program running with data and then an application suite running above that and an operating system running above that, and they're all exchanging information in real time.
Error correction, redundancy, all the complexities.
Error correction in the most sophisticated of ways.
And so the point is that the evolutionists are using a double standard. They will say that SETI is good science and, you know, maybe a type of forensic science. Well, if we find information in the DNA, that is also very good science, and that proves that there had to be intelligence behind it.
Right.
It doesn't say that there's a real small chance that maybe it wasn't intelligence. Information science tells us it's impossible for that to happen.
Yeah, if we got a series of prime numbers coming to the Earth from space, we would know that some intelligence was behind that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Evolutionists,
they don't like information science, Fred. They don't like information. I've debated evolutionists for 20 years, formally, informally. They hate to talk about information. They hate to talk about math. They hate to talk about mathematics.
I submit they hate to talk about science, real science.
They hate to talk about science. They like to talk about a fetus in the mother's womb developing gills and being a fish, even though there are no gills and there is no fish. That's what they like to put on their Harvard professor website.
They like to tell stories.
Now, Fred, when we look at the solar system and our galaxy, the Milky Way and beyond, it's hard for us as creationists to understand how these things came to be the way they are. like even stars that explode, you know, why do they explode? And supernova remnants. And how is it that everything has gotten like this? And so can we talk about that for a moment? Because some creationists attempt to, you know, produce theories that will explain, like Humphreys in his white hole
cosmology.
Yeah. Starlight and Time, his book. Creationists trying to explain the universe and the starlight and time problem. How did starlight pass through such a long distance to get to the Earth if everything is only 6,000 years old?
Yeah, and if there's a supernova remnant, why would, you know, if God created the universe mature, then some creationists will ask, well, why would he create a supernova remnant? That means he created an explosion and there's never a star.
Right.
So there's lots of questions like that that we, you know, that we're working on.
Right, right. And so,
and this article kind of touches on that, but, you know, Danny Faulkner's main point at the end of this article is, you know, we need to do a lot of research, and he's hoping to spur more interest mm-hmm. in this topic because there are lots of interesting questions. You know, I think a supernova remnant is really cool looking. So God could have done that just for our pleasure because we know he does things like that.
Well, that's true. Think of the beauty in this earth, and not only just on the surface of the earth, but in the ocean. And you take some mollusk and you open the shell, and the shell is beautiful. And there's beauty everywhere. And our family, we went to Florida for vacation in December, first week in December, and we saw fireworks. And everyone who was there loved the fireworks. And God puts fireworks in the Milky Way. You know, we love that kind of thing. But so God could have many reasons for designing the universe the way he has, but it is fun and exciting to try to understand and try to think God's thoughts after him.
Exactly. Take it from a biblical perspective and not a secular perspective mm-hmm. of billions of years and a big bang, everything starting from a little dot exploding.
Right. So when we look at the stars and we see, wow, the light is trillions of miles away, even further, billions of light years away. And so how is it that that light could get here? And so creation scientists, cosmologists, they try to come up with models that would explain by the laws of physics and some laws of physics we think may operate how this could have all happened. But Fred, the creation itself, was the creation itself naturalistic by natural law?
No.
No.
Of course not.
Right. I'm trying to throw you for a loop. Yeah. I'm becoming an evolutionist. No. The creation was supernatural. God created the physical universe. And as he created the physical universe, the physics of it, the physical laws came into being.
And we know from the Bible that many things were created mature, right? Bob, did God create just the seeds, or did he create the trees?
He created the trees. What would the animals have eaten if he made no trees and plants?
That's right.
And fruits.
He's going to make them wait that long to eat? Yeah. That's a long fast.
Right. Adam and Eve were put in the Garden of Eden, and that garden was in full bloom. It was beautiful. The trees in the garden were gorgeous, the tree of life and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. These were serious trees. If God makes a garden, he makes a garden. So not only was life on earth like that, but our sun was made mature and very stable so it could provide a steady source of energy for life on earth. And the same thing with the solar system and the galaxy. So where is the boundary between the creative, miraculous work of God and then the continuation with the physical laws? That is hard to determine.
Yeah, we know at the end of the first chapter of Genesis, God said when he was done creating after 6 days, he said everything was very good.
Everything was very good.
And then that sometime later, the fall occurred. And, yeah. You know, what kind of...
And that broke things.
That broke things. Now, I'm not saying, Bob, that I think God created a supernova remnant, an explosion of a star. I kind of lean against that idea, but it's reasonable. The point is, we really have there's a lot we can look at still. Mm-hmm. There's a lot to learn in this field.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we do have a starlight problem, but the evolutionist starlight problem, Bob, is a lot worse for them, isn't it?
A lot worse because it's called the horizon problem. How did the background radiation temperature of the whole universe get to the steady state that it's in? There's not enough time in even billions of years for that heat energy to travel from one end of the universe to the other. So they have a way more serious problem because they don't have a God who created.
That's right.
We have a God who created and who could stretch out the heavens, as the Bible says, what, a dozen times.
Yeah, he stretches out the heavens, and maybe that's how this whole mechanism works with creating stars, stretching them out. Now, mm-hmm. it kind of plays into Humphrey's white hole cosmology, mm-hmm. And that's one, to be honest, I don't really espouse to either,
yeah,
because it kind of implies that the universe is, you know, billions of years old.
Maybe
but
out there, but not here.
Here, it's
the opposite of a black hole.
And using Newton's, you know, laws.
Right. But now, Fred, we're about out of time, and we just got started. First article. But let's do this again, okay?
Okay, definitely.
It's a great series, Real Science Friday. I think NPR is upset. They have their Science Friday program.
They have their
program,
Science Friday.
And we have Real Science Friday on K-Love.
I think they should change the name of theirs to False Science Friday.
Yeah, or Science Fiction Friday.
There you go. Science I like that better.
Fiction Friday. Okay, so if anyone out there would like a subscription to the Creation Research Society Quarterly, we will get that for you here at Bob and Yurt Live. If you give a donation of $50 or more to Bob and Yurt Live, it's not tax deductible. Or if you buy our science pack, which is $100, and you get fabulous videos, debates, a fabulous science book.
And that includes Unlocking the Mystery of Life, which
Unlocking,
is just a highly recommend that video. Very good animation,
really good
graphics.
Video. Yeah, and Walt Brown's book In the Beginning, and the debate I did with Old Earth creationist called Age of the Earth Debate. So if you're interested in that, you can go to our website, kgov.com, kgov.com, click on the store, and our science products, get the science kit, or donate $50 or more to Bob and Yurt Live, and then we will sign you up for the Creation Research Society Quarterly, and Fred Williams, he's their webmaster.
And you'll also get a bi-monthly newsletter that has lots of neat articles. And, you know, most of this stuff is written for the layman. Some of it can be real technical. But the newsletter is always from a layman's perspective with the updated, you know, the latest and greatest in creation science.
And the last two shows, we talked about that Creation magazine out of Australia. So if somebody thinks this CRSQ is too technical and they want something a little more family-friendly, then just let us know and we'll subscribe you to the Creation magazine.
Absolutely.
So that'll work. Fred Williams, thank you for joining me.
Thank you. And that was, again, Bob, collaboratorproject.com.
With an S in there, collaboratorsproject.com.
Okay, I want to make sure I got that right for the listeners.
That's right. T-minus 7 days and counting to the January 31st deadline. If Whites does not quit by midnight January 31st, there will be a Super Bowl party at Gary Megason's home in Lakewood. Well, right in front of his home. There will be pop and chips, and the game will be on the radio. And there'll be barbecue, cheeseburgers, brats. I mean, it's going to be great.
And I think he's a New England fan, so show up in your Giants garb.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So, all right, thank you, Fred Williams. In Arvada, Colorado, Maranatha Christian Center. What a tremendous school. Check that school out. And our website, kgov.com. In February is our telethon, so get ready for that.